Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 284. This is Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
I seem to be trapped in a spaghetti western.
That's what it does sound like, that, doesn't it? Phil Wilson.
Here from the old campfire.
And Julio Ojeda Zapata.
Feeling mellow.
And our buddy Graham Thickens is off this week. He is, I don't know.
Football bound.
Yeah, something like that. So, the music, I really do try to find things that are interesting and different. And
are we in a porn video or what?
No, again, no one wants to see that if I was in it. So, but Phil, where are you? You sound like you're remote somewhere.
I am remote. Well, I've always been somewhat remote, but I am at Minitronix this morning. The first IoT hack day is getting underway right now at 8:30 marks the time where all the teams that have gathered, and there's 12 teams this year for this inaugural event. They're in the main room right now telling everyone what they're going to build. So they'll be hacking all day, building connected devices and trying to meet their goal and get it built and get it working. And then tonight at, I believe it's 8:30, 7:30, maybe, they do their pitches. Let me get that time exactly so we know exactly what's going on. It's going to be a great time. It's 7:30 to 8:30 tonight. Final pitches at Minitronix over on Energy Park Drive there by the old stadium. So come out and see us at Minitronix. Boy, this place is big. I didn't realize how much of this office space or office park they've sucked up, but it's
And I don't know much about them, but they're in medical devices, right?
Yep.
And so what's their motivation behind sponsoring this hack day and letting it be at their facility?
I just think it's just one of those things that they had the space, and it is a perfect spot for a hack day with large open space and lots of power outlets and things like that. So, but a little bit later on in the podcast, Justin Crammons, who is co-founder of the event, will be joining us. So we'll talk a little bit more about that in a little bit, if that's okay with you guys. He's, again, just kind of getting things kicked off, so we didn't want to get in the way of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, in the meantime, why don't you tell us about the Minnesota Interactive Marketing Association, the MIMA event that happened on
MIMA Summit.
MIMA Summit was on Wednesday, right? Or was it
another big event held over at the Hilton in downtown Minneapolis? It was a large group, about 1,000 folks again, and a well-attended event and some interesting speakers. The keynote speakers were probably more inspirational and informational rather than, necessarily relevant to the actual marketing community. They were very much more 10,000 foot view. It started off with Jaron Lanier, who is a writer and computer scientist.
And virtual
reality expert. And, it was very interesting. It was, when anybody starts a presentation by playing the can, which is an exotic instrument at best, and jamming out with that, with his dreadlocks a-flowing, it's going to be an interesting discussion, and it really was. I don't know if the majority of marketers in the room got as much out of it as they could, but they should have, but it was great. Very, very 10,000-foot view and enjoyed that. Dean Kamen was the lunchtime.
Well, I was just going to ask, because I have a man crush on Dean Kamen. A science crush.
What an inspirational guy. It was just the stuff that he has done with his team of engineers. And he talked a lot about FIRST, which is the robot competition that they founded years ago and has gotten larger and larger and larger. In fact, it was so large in the Twin Cities when the Twin Cities did the regional robot competition here. They had to actually have two different regionals because there were so many teams. So, it was really great to see it. What was interesting, he commented directly to the folks from General Mills that were in the room. He said, you might want to try putting, some tech innovators on their boxes of Wheaties and you could start with women if you'd like.
Well, it's funny cause I just
put up 2 days later, they did roll it out.
I just put a link in the show notes of a post that I did on my own blog back in 2009 about why isn't Dean Kamen on a Wheaties box?
Yeah.
Because the guy is, I mean, he is such an incredibly prolific inventor. You know, people kind of say, well, yeah, but he made the Segway, you know, kind of poo-pooed it. Well, the Segway came from a wheelchair that he built that climbs stairs, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
And he's got the Wankel engine.
He showed some clips from his appearance on Colbert with the chair. And what was kind of interesting to me is I recall way back in the day when I was going to the University of Northern Iowa, I had a friend who was in the physics field, and they were actually working on just such a chair. So it was kind of interesting to see that came to fruition with Dean Kamen and his team. So, and then Amy Webb wrapped things up with she's postures herself as a media futurist from Webb Media Group, and it was here are the trends, and here's what's coming in the future, and. You know, for all of us and probably most of the people that listen to our podcast, it was pretty much it. Yeah. Yeah. Wearables are going to be big. Oh yeah. There you go. Yep. Yep.
Okay. So it was kind of basic, but
yeah, it was very basic, but yeah. You know, it was a good event. They had, I think 6 or 7 tracks and speakers all day. And, it was nice to get and hang with the folks at MEMA.
Very nice. Now, did they do the videos again, like they've done in years past? So
nope, they stopped doing those last year.
So. Oh, really?
Okay. Or 2 years ago, as a matter of fact. I think that was the last time we were there, right?
I believe so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's actually too bad because they were really great to watch after the fact.
Yeah, I have a feeling that was maybe a cost cutting thing. I don't know.
Okay.
And you know, it was always very difficult for them to, because they were so busy all the time, to be able to get the stuff published and out. So
right.
So anyway, great event. So congratulations to the folks at MEMA for putting on yet another successful summit.
Yep. Very nice. Very nice. Hey, Julio.
Yeah.
You, my friend, wrote a really, really good article about something that I had no clue about, which was U.S. Internet having plans for a much broader Twin Cities broadband rollout. So can you tell us about that? Because I think this is a big deal.
Yeah, I got to give a hat tip to my former Pioneer Press colleague now at NPR, Marty Moylan, who he did a Minnesota broadband story and made a passing reference to U.S. Internet having expansion plans. So I can't claim to have a scoop on that. But I call them up because I specifically wanted... What was missing from Moylan's story was, you know, St. Paul. And so I called them up and asked them, hey, are you guys coming? I kind of jokingly said, hey, when can I sign up for your service at my house? And their half-joking response was, very soon. But they're serious about, you know, currently they have fiber and broadband wireless in Minneapolis and a little piece of Minnetonka. But they... starting next summer are going to start very aggressively expanding in two phases. Phase one, in the Twin Cities, you know, during the nice weather, they're going to start, moving to other parts of the Twin Cities. They eventually want to be between, in the entirety of the region between 694 and 494. And they're going to be doing that, over the next few years. They want to be Twin Cities wide by 2020, one interesting thing is in the winter when they can't be digging, they're going to switch gears and do a parallel expansion in the southern United States. So they're going to
interesting. Okay,
they're basically going to go national, but about below the Mason-Dixon line. And so basically U.S. Internet is basically a Minneapolis company. They're about to massively expand, and it's mainly fiber, I gather, not the Wi-Fi. And I think fiber is something that they're currently emphasizing. In fact, their official URL when you Google them is fiber.usinternet.com. So I find that interesting. We are talking about fiber directly to homes and businesses.
Yeah, which is the most expensive part. I remember reading about that. And it was like $280 billion to put fiber into every U.S. home. Go ahead, Tim.
So Julia, are they getting some investment from outside to finance this expansion? Because it is expensive to do this.
I didn't dig too much into the financials because they're playing a little coy about that. They weren't giving me a lot of information about that. But they are going to be competing directly in the Twin Cities with CenturyLink. CenturyLink recently announced that in selected portions of the metro, they're going to be offering 1 gigabit per second service. And U.S. Internet is going to be a direct competitor to that. So the gist of my story was right now, St. Paul, quite frankly, is a little bit of an internet backwater in terms of internet service. But in the near future, at least we'll have at least two providers in St. Paul offering 1 gigabit per second service. And then U.S. Internet is upping the ante. They said they're going to selectively offer 10 gigabit service, which is crazy. I don't know who would need 10 gigabit service, but that is going to be an option. So.
Well, you know,
I know who needs 10 gigabit.
Yeah. Who?
It's Kat Casa Borsch.
Yeah, right. Well, I will tell you,
need 10 gigabits.
I will tell
just
you
that. Just so he could turn on all his lights.
Well, I worked with a woman when I was at Vignette, and this was in 2002. We were having a big team dinner in San Francisco at a great Chinese restaurant, which I won't go off on a tangent on that, but oh my God.
Too late.
Yeah.
Too late.
But anyway, so I'm sitting next to this woman who is in our services group, and we're chatting, blah, blah, blah. And she says, yeah, you know, and then I really am enjoying the 10 gigabit per second speed for my broadband. Now in 2002, I had 6 megabits per second down, and I think, you know, 1.5 or 2 megabit per second up with my Comcast connection. And I looked at her and I said, no, you mean megabits per second. She goes, no, gigabits per second. Well, she'd bought a condo south of Market and they dropped in a 10 gigabit per second connection and it was symmetrical, like what U.S. Internet is going to do. So it's 10 gigabit up and down. And she said, the only downside is the guy upstairs has a rack of 1U servers and he puts fans on the floor and they vibrate. So it makes all this noise because he was running his startup out of his condo because he had that kind of speed. And so I thought, okay, well, that's maybe one of the downsides, but could you imagine having that kind of speed? Wow. That would just be incredible.
And chatting with U.S. Internet, they made the logical point that not everybody needs nonstop consistent gigabit service, but it certainly comes in handy, you know, for some power users like gamers and so forth when, you know, they need it in bursts, like when downloading the latest Xbox game or whatever.
Well, I know this is skipping ahead a little bit. Sorry about this, but you know, the streaming stuff is, you know, as you put in the show notes, Tim, about HBO, going to launch HBO Go as an app, for streaming. And then CBS is going to do the same thing. And then who's the third one?
Univision.
And that's
Univision.
Yeah. Sorry. Okay. That's right.
Well, and let's
try that again. Univision.
Univision.
Thank you, okay. Julio. Well,
my accent's bad. Sorry.
Well, you know, with that kind of speed, I mean, this is, you could be watching, you know, 10 channels at once streaming them. I mean,
yeah, the relevant acronym here is 4K. Cause you need a massive, bandwidth. Like for instance, Netflix currently is streaming, House of Cards and Breaking Bad in 4K resolution. Which is great, but you need some heavy duty broadband for that.
Yeah.
I think you need to have the studio right next door to you to really enjoy it.
Right.
Yeah.
You need to live next to Kevin Spacey, actually.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
because I've been reporting off and on gigabits broadband. In outstate Minnesota, there are some cities that have fiber to homes and businesses that are offering gigabit. And I've talked to some providers who offer gigabit service. And as recently as a few months ago, they were telling me, you know, yeah, we're offering that as kind of a value add, but quite frankly, not many people are signing up for it, and we don't expect many people to do so. And just fast forward just 2 or 3 months, and I posed this, U.S. Internet was telling me that just a few months ago. Fast forward a few months, and I posed that very question to the U.S. Internet again, and their answer is completely different. They're saying, yeah, we're expecting in the not too distant future for this to actually be kind of important and in a mainstream kind of an option. So the whole thinking on that is very quickly shifting, which is interesting.
Well, listen, one of the reasons that we wanted Julio to be on, because, you know, we don't have enough Apple fanboys that partake in the podcast. I'm just kidding. The reason we did want to have Julio on is because we want to get your view, Julio, on all the big announcements. We had Apple announce its iPad and Mac event at Mac events. We had Google launching Android Lollipop. Why don't we start with the Apple event? What was your take on the rollout of the new iPads and Mac improvements and this operating system called I believe it's Yosemite.
Yosemite.
Yeah, Yosemite.
Tim grows tired of my humor.
I know. Sorry, yeah. said by only an Iowan.
Yeah.
Right. Us Californians, we know Yosemite.
See, when I do that, my kids look at me and go, you know, Dad, that just wasn't even funny.
Yeah.
And they're serious. Yeah. So anyway.
So what did you think, Julio? What do you think was the big takeaway from the event?
Well, I don't think this last Apple event was all that earth shattering. The upgrades to the iPad were sort of incremental and marginal. And the whole iPad thing seems to be Apple's trying to keep the product relevant, but the whole thing seems to be falling off the radar just a little bit with the iPhone 6 Plus coming on the scene and to a large extent subverting the whole tablet thing. I have a story coming out for Tidbits in the next few days about how I tested a bunch of third-party keyboards to use with the iPhone 6 Plus as kind of a little workstation kind of a thing. And so I'm getting a little iffy on the whole tablet thing. So I wasn't terribly impressed with the tablet announcements. The 5K iMac is just making me salivate. The iMac is my Mac. It's the kind of computer that I want to use, that I always use and always want to use. I have a home office and I have an iMac in there, and that's what I use. And it's just salivating, but it's very, very high end. It's the most, I believe the most expensive iMac ever made. And it's for a very specialized audience. And that kind of screen technology is not going to trickle down to the masses for at least 2 or 3 years.
Yes, so but you still want it badly, don't you?
Yes, and Apple's sending me, I'm getting a loaner on Monday, so I'm very excited.
Oh, you suck. Oh, man. I wake up in a cold sweat thinking about that box. That would be great.
I'm very excited.
I went to the Apple store last night to look at it, and they don't have it yet at the Mall of America.
No. Yeah. But So this Apple event was a little underwhelming, quite honestly. But the thing that a lot of people are missing is the really important thing coming down the pike here is Apple Pay. I mean, that is the real seismic shift Apple-wise this season, because that is going to really have an impact, an immediate impact. So the NFC payments, you know, tap to pay with your phone, that has been around for years. I've played with it off and on. It hasn't been terribly exciting. And the whole Apple angle on that is gonna change the conversation very quickly. I think a lot of people are gonna suddenly get it and embrace it and start using it. And it's gonna be very interesting. Apple Pay activates on Monday, so I'm gonna be out with my iPhone, you know, making some sample purchases.
Yeah.
What are you gonna get me?
I'm having a Big Mac for lunch.
Oh. There you go. Well, you know, what's interesting is you talk to a lot of mobile pundits, and we've we've talked for a long time about NFC, and it's just, you know, taking so long to catch on. And most people agree that now that Apple has adopted it, all of a sudden it'll work. So it'll all of a sudden be the payment system. So I'm interested to see how that starts to work. And we're already hard at work at putting together an app that does virtual pickpocketing. But more on that later. So.
Yeah. Well, what about the the Apple Pay thing? I'm right with you, Julio. But what about, because one of the things we skipped over with the iPad was the fact that Apple announced, or they didn't announce on stage, it was just in there, the new Apple SIM card, which allows you to choose, because, I've got Verizon on mine, and you can choose between different carriers. And
except for Verizon. Verizon's not in on this.
Verizon's not in on it. Yeah, exactly.
So it's only three carriers here in the U.S. now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a very interesting thing, because a lot of people might want cellular capability on their iPads, but they may not want it all the time. They may want it just when they're traveling or so forth, or just selectively. And having a choice of carrier is kind of important, because in the Twin Cities, for instance, I've had very, very bad luck with Sprint. So, for instance, if I hypothetically were a Sprint customer and I was having bad luck with it, I could just drop it like a rock and switch to a different carrier. And having a SIM that that gives you that flexibility is kind of huge. Like if you live in the Twin Cities and you're having good luck with one carrier, but then you move to another city, and the carrier equation there is a little different. You have that option. Just having this choice, having this flexibility is great. It's a little obscure thing that potentially for a lot of people makes their lives a lot easier. And,
well, what I'm excited about?
Yeah.
Is being able to travel and not have to buy a SIM card and put a SIM card in there and then make sure that I hang on to my existing SIM card and tuck it away. Because December of 2015, the European Union has put into place, a cellular carrier mandate that there will be no roaming fees. And so as a consequence, cellular carriers will be able to come up with programs that will allow people to roam anywhere with both their phones and their connected iPads. So I think that's pretty significant. And, cause it'll really help to drive prices down.
Yeah, and T-Mobile has a similar thing where now it's a lot less expensive to travel, because you get I forget what the details are, but you get a certain basic level of outside the U.S. Service without the steep cost. So all of these pieces are slowly coming together to just make a life a little less hellish for mobile phone users. And we're overdue, because that whole industry has just been a nightmare for years and years.
Well, and the other thing is, a lot, the people's conjecture was, well, Apple didn't say anything about this on stage because they can't afford to disrupt their relationships with the current carriers. Yeah, which
I don't think that's the case. They just have so many things to talk about that some stuff just falls by the wayside. Although they probably could have cut back a little on the Colbert and added some useful information. But yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I like Golden Delicious. Or was it Red Delicious? I forgot.
Chairman Honeycrisp.
Right,
yeah, that was
right.
Tim Cook. Well, one thing that was kind of confusing is now their iPad lineup has three iPad minis in it, which is
kind of an odd
kind of a deal. So it's $250 for the original iPad mini, and then it's $299 for the iPad mini 2, which is the last year's iPad mini. And then iPad mini 3, the only difference is it has Touch ID, which makes that whole buying decision, if you're looking at a mini, very confusing.
Yeah, it really does, I think.
Well,
or it makes you go for last year's model.
Well, the knock against iPads until recently was cost. I mean, if you compared an iPad to a Nexus or whatever, you were paying a premium. And this is Apple's response to that. It's a lot hard to not buy an iPad now because you can get into one at a very attractive cost. Your point is well taken. They probably could have just kept the original Mini and then jumped right to the one with the Touch ID and kept the middle one out. So that makes things a little more confusing. But now with more choices in the lineup, it's a lot harder for people to avoid an iPad purchase, which is what they, in many cases, they want in the first place. So,
So Julio, they didn't do anything with iPod touches. So do you think they're just going to kill it?
I don't know. The iPod Touch may be like the click wheel iPod, which kind of stuck around for years and years until they finally killed it. And it's possible the iPod Touch may be that sort of a product that doesn't get a lot of changes, but just kind of hangs on for a while. And quite frankly, I thought of that and pulled out the latest model iPod Touch they still have at home, and it's still a sweet little device without the phone part in it. It's a incredibly thin device compared to even the current model iPhones, and so I don't think they had a lot of they were feeling a lot of pressure to do anything with it, especially since iOS 8 will run on it. So I don't think, and Apple, it being a relatively small company, has to prioritize. A lot of products don't get updated as frequently as people might like because they quite frankly don't have the resources. They don't have limitless resources, and so they have to prioritize. And this is very low priority for them, I would imagine. But I would say it's likely that some updates are coming in the next year or two, but it's one of those products that very, very quickly is becoming less and less relevant to users.
Well, I have to tell you, I was just blown away, and your mind was blown, as you said, that you loved the iPhone 6 Plus. I mean, I really vacillated. I had ordered a 6 Plus and then went into the AT&T store a second time because it's right there by my house. Mm-hmm. And held both of them, and I really agonized over the decision, but ultimately went with the 6 just because I just couldn't see myself. And I've already got a Mini, mm-hmm. but I couldn't see myself walking around with this enormous phone. But now, after your article, I'm kind of second-guessing myself. So you loved it.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where I looked at it somewhat analytically. I basically did the list on one side, the list on the other side. What are the pros and cons? And it really boils down to the big knock I had against the Plus was just the sheer bulk of it. When I tried to jam it into my pants pocket with one of Apple's cases, it just felt like this big, huge thing in my pocket. And it was very annoying. I mean, it's just huge compared, and it felt like a real burden. And I'm using my Scotty vest garments a lot more because I can sort of tuck it in one of those pockets, and it's great. So the bulk is the big minus with the Plus, as it were. But the advantages, some of which were a little unexpected, vastly outweighed the minuses. I'm doing a lot more reading on the device. My reading has lately fallen off quite a bit, but I suddenly had this device that I'm carrying with me everywhere that has this big screen, and I suddenly started getting back into Overdrive and 3M Cloud Library and Kindle this was not intentional at all. My reading just spiked like 300%. I just powered through just in the last few, like Daniel Suarez's Influx, which is a really good techno thriller. I powered through that sucker in a day on the Plus, and it's all because of I have a larger device that I'm carrying everywhere. A tablet is not that device because a tablet an extra device. You're always carrying [S2] Right. [S1] Your phone, but you have to sort of make a conscious decision to also carry a tablet. now both of those functions have sort of wished into one device, and I'm watching a lot more video. I'm just doing a lot. I'm doing a lot more on the go photo editing. You know, usually in the past, I usually take photos and then just wait till I got back to my computer and transfer them to the computer for the photo editing. I'm doing a lot more photo editing on the go because you can. I'm not getting any younger. I'm like 50-plus guy, and having this big screen to see things better is great. I went out on a photo walk and took a lot of fall pictures, and I mentioned the story that I have coming on Tidbits about external keyboards. I've been very consciously using the iPhone 6 Plus as a little mobile workstation. It's kind of a mini laptop, and it has its limits because obviously the screen is cramped compared to that of a tablet or a laptop. But it if you have the right external keyboard, it works great. Microsoft has a new universal mobile keyboard out, which is absolutely fantastic. And you put those two things together, and you go out to a coffee shop or something, and it's amazing how much stuff you can get done.
Well, unless you're, you got to listen to the security tip of the week this week, if you're in a coffee shop. We won't get there yet.
Well,
but
hey, if you need a bigger phone though, you could always just go grab the Nexus 6.
That's what I was just going to say, Tim. Yeah. Have you really looked at this? Six-inch smartphone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my only concern is that they haven't seemed to have fixed the bad camera that's in all of the Moto X's.
Oh, really?
Even the new one. Yeah, it has the same camera that the new Moto X has. But everything else looks fantastic, and that Nexus 9 tablet also looks very interesting.
Well, for $400 for the base model of the phone, that's really a great price.
Yeah, the six and the six. If I'm looking at them correctly, is a six has a bigger screen, but it's not all that bigger than the 6 Plus because the problem with the iPhones is the bezel, the new Nexus phone is well designed in that it has less of a bezel kind of a situation. So you actually have more screen real estate without a lot of added extra bulk.
So Tim, did you have a chance to take in a little bit of the information on Lollipop, which was, thank God they're not calling it Android L anymore, and what were your thoughts?
Good upgrade. It seems to be polishing what they had with KitKat. I'm a little bit disappointed with the name. I don't know why. It just seems like a bad name.
What did you want? Lemon meringue?
I want them to go back to desserts. Yeah, I didn't. This candy side thing is just not my gig.
Okay.
So it's just personal preference. But right. I think that, you know, it's a good upgrade. And hopefully, you know, most of the flagship devices will be upgraded quickly. All the Nexus devices, except for the Nexus 4, strangely enough, seem to be in the road to get the next version fairly quickly here.
Yeah, HTC announced that they were going to be upgrading the 1 series, the M8 and the M7. So that's supposed to happen within the next, what I believe their website said, 90 days. So, which is not exactly
the Nexus 4 is getting Lollipop.
Oh, it is? Oh, okay.
Yes, it is. Uh-huh.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, what I thought was interesting was when I went to the Lollipop page you just look at it and it's like, pick up where you left off. The songs, photos, apps, and even recent searches from one of your Android devices can be immediately enjoyed across all of your Android devices. Sounds like continuity on OS X Yosemite.
Well, we've had that.
Exactly.
I don't think that's a super new feature. But
what I found interesting is the fact that the acceleration of multi-device use is there with Apple, is there with Android. So the whole ecosystem is going to take advantage of it. But where's Microsoft in this equation with Windows Mobile? I mean, they're still not connecting devices together in meaningful ways. And maybe they can't because they really seriously don't control enough of the hardware ecosystem to be able to really pull it off. I don't know.
Well, they could at least do it with the Nokia handsets. I mean, they could do a Nexus style thing with Nokia.
Right.
If they wanted to.
What you're may be overlooking is that the recent developer preview of Windows 10 is, and they've said this, is missing a ton of marquee features that they're not talking about yet.
Okay.
So I would wager serious money that if they hadn't been seriously thinking about that until now, watching continuity and Lollipop and so forth, they're probably gonna make that a priority.
Got it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But on the continuity front, I'm amused when Apple says if your iPhone rings, you'll see that on your computer, because I've been doing that with Google Voice and Google Hangouts for years now. So it's like Apple Pay. It's not really a new thing. There's just kind of an Apple polish on it. But the sort of thing is, if you have your thing set up correctly, these features have been with us for a while now.
So one of the things that they announced was this Android TV device, the Nexus Player. Mm-hmm. So Julio, what do you think that they're going to get this right finally? Because they've had some missteps in the past with Google TV, but then Chromecast seems to be a big hit. So I don't know if this muddies the waters or not.
I haven't seen the new player, but I'm gathering it's basically a turbocharged Chromecast. That will now compete pretty much head to head with the Amazon Fire TV device, because the setup is almost identical. You get the little box, you get the little puck device with the basic controller, and then if you want to spend extra, you get the game controller, exactly like Amazon. Same underpinning, Android underpinnings. Same gaming capabilities, this new device has a shot at being more successful than the Fire TV, because the problem with Amazon is that it's a little obnoxious with its proprietary interface that only diehard Amazon geeks, and I don't know how many of those are out there, will like. While Google makes things a little more vanilla Android, and it does that very well. So I have a hunch that device is going to be pretty popular, especially for people who might have found the Chromecast a little limiting. Chromecast is a very basic device. This new device has all the casting capabilities built into it, but then it takes it in some interesting new directions, including gaming. So it's a logical progression, I think, in exactly the direction that people will want it to go. So I have a hunch they didn't really make a big deal about it. They sort of announced it kind of in passing, but I think people are going to be snapping this thing up for the holidays and at a steady clip. I have a hunch.
It has a really cool case design. It's like a puck, literally. It's a round cylinder kind of a thing. Uh-huh. So I like it, and it looks like it would look good in your living room. And it's only $100, $99. So that's also attractive.
The problem with that is if I look at my entertainment center, I'm suddenly overflowing with these little puck light devices. Like it gets a little confusing for consumers, because now there are so many things. You get a Roku, you get a Fire TV, you get an Apple TV. And not every device has every feature. Like, some have HBO, some don't. Some have Amazon, some don't. And it gets very confusing, and it makes me desperately wish for one device that had all the features that I want, and that totally doesn't exist, which is a problem.
Yeah, but you know what, though, is having all these different devices and having a son, you can teach him that he never has to go outside, because there's so much content he can yeah. view. So, yeah, that'll be a good thing, right? Oh, geez.
Yeah, my son is an interesting case study, because he never uses the TV. He's always in the kitchen room. On the kitchen table with his laptop.
Oh, really?
Watching YouTube videos in one window while working on a Google Doc in another window. He has like five little Google Chat windows going with all of his friends, who he never sees because he only talks to them on Google Chat.
Oh, how funny!
That, And then he's on his Xbox, having Call of Duty battles with his buddies down the street, who he never sees because he's only playing Xbox with them.
Well, my son's the same thing. I mean, he literally will sit and watch videos on his iPhone while he's on his Xbox, or while he's doing his homework on his laptop.
My wife has to continually scold him to close the YouTube window and concentrate fully on your studies. Man. Yeah. So it's interesting.
Incredible. So,
the one thing I just noticed, we kind of glossed over, and I want to make sure that we do comment or touch base on it, because I think that we should have an assignment for listeners this week. Would we execute a test that you must go to the Ars Technica review of Yosemite and read all of it. And
you know what? I did. It's 24 pages. I read the whole thing, and I got to tell you, it is one of the best reviews I've ever read of an operating system.
Did it have pictures, and was there like a denouement?
Exposition? It's not like you have to study the thing, but it really, it helped me in terms of, cause people always come to me, family and friends and stuff. They always come to me and go, "Wow, what do you think about the Dweebazarb they put in there? How would I go about using that? Should I even bother?" Well, if I don't know anything about it, I can't either use it myself and so one of the nice things about this was really going through feature by feature, and he has all this commentary about it, and it was a quick read. I mean, it was probably 15 minutes, so it wasn't a big deal. But
you're talking about Syracuse.
The Ars Technica review, yeah.
Yeah, Syracuse is, it's legendary. He's legendary, yeah.
Yeah.
But this is his 10th review. He's done every version of OS 10.
Correct.
Yeah. And he's done it in that very, very same way, where he takes it and he unpacks it in minute detail and just blows it out and, really thoroughly goes through, what the features are and how they work.
Right, right.
So the kind of the historical context that he has for the reviews now make it very interesting. And also, I think you get a lot more information from than any place else.
Now, Steve, you upgraded to Yosemite.
I was on the beta. I was on the beta on my laptop for a couple months, and then.
But you uploaded it to your main machine.
My
right?
production machine. I loaded it. Yeah, and I adore it. It's quieter, so a lot of activities aren't running. It most importantly, because we're recording audio, is it? They must have made some changes to Core Audio because it runs smoother and it runs better than it has before.
Nice.
Mm. And there's little subtle things that nobody ever would know. But that was kind of interesting. Now here's what's coming out though. The one thing that I thought was, sort of surprising was I run Little Snitch. It's a program for the Mac that allows you to, approve or unapprove, connections that your machine wants to make to the outside world.
And run bootleg software without getting busted.
No, I'd never do that. I'm serious. I just don't do that. But anyway, one thing I didn't know is because Spotlight, the search in the operating system, now includes Wikipedia and web searches and all of that, that Spotlight phones home. So all of your searching through Spotlight, both for local files and Wikipedia and online and all that, are sent to Apple and third parties, including Microsoft. So a guy posted a fix Mac OS 10. All you do is you copy and paste this into the terminal, and it turns it off, so it won't phone home anymore. And so if anybody cares about that, I'll put a link in the show notes, and you can go in and fix OS 10 Yosemite so it doesn't phone home.
There you go. Is that the security tip of the week?
It is not.
What is the security tip of the week, Steve?
Steve's security tip of the week.
Okay, so my security tip of the week is I have to tell you that, you guys know that I am a big VPN fan, use that private internet access. I pay him $40 a year, and I can have up to 5 devices that I use. Well, so I haven't really stayed up on what's going on with public Wi-Fi spoofing and so forth. I'm always careful about what I connect to, but then I'm always running my VPN, so I know stuff's connected. But when I went out and poked around, I read this article, which talked about it, it's in Medium, and I'll put a link in the show notes. But the article was, maybe it's better if you don't read this story on public Wi-Fi. And the tagline is, we took a hacker to a cafe, and in 20 minutes, he knew where everyone else was born, what schools they attended, and the last five things they Googled.
Wow.
And I started to read this article, and he's talking about this black box that this guy had. And this guy was showing him, he's a security guy in Amsterdam, and showing him all the stuff that he can see that's flying through his machine, because he's doing a man-in-the-middle attack. He's spoofing the Wi-Fi name, you know, the SSID, and people are connecting to it, and then he is routing it through his laptop. It turns out the box is called the Wi-Fi Pineapple, which I knew of, but I really haven't paid a whole lot of attention for probably the last 2 years. It's $100, and they also have a forum, the Hack 5 forum, that has stuff like the Wi-Fi or Wi-Fi Pineapple University, so people can teach each other how to do different things. But you can spoof the Wi-Fi, and not only that, but you can also set up a fake SSL certificate, so you can spoof the IP, and so you think you're connecting to Wells Fargo, and you could be serving from your laptop a Wells Fargo page, and somebody's actually connecting through HTTPS, so they've got the padlock in their browser. They think they're safe, but they're actually connecting to this guy's laptop and logging in and everything else, and now this guy's got your Facebook login, your bank password, maybe credit card information, and so forth. So even if you were encrypting your traffic through a VPN, he could still see your VPN connection information, but the VPN would still encrypt pretty much all the way through. So my tip is, please, please just get a VPN and use it whenever you're using public Wi-Fi, please. And that's my security tip of the week.
Well done, sir. Well done.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Hey, listen, guys. Justin is here from the IoT Hack Day. Do we want to go to Justin real quick, and then we can come back with our cool things this week?
Yeah, let's hear more about it.
Well,
yeah.
Well, what I'll do is I'll hand this over to the mic over to Justin, so you guys can.
Hello? Phil?
Oh. We just lost Phil's remote.
No, no. Hold on. Am I back?
There you are. Hey, Justin. There. How you doing? You're on with, this is Steve, and we're on with Tim Elliott and Julio Hayda Zapata.
All right, guys. How's it going?
Great.
Good.
How's the event?
The event is awesome. We've got a dozen teams here. We just kind of had our kickoff. In fact, that's why I was just able to join you right now. But teams are hacking. Teams are hacking away. One of the things that I think is pretty exciting about this event, too, is, well, and again, I don't know how much background your listeners have on this, but it's the IoT Hack Day. So people are coming here and hacking for 12 hours, trying to figure out what they can build in that short period of time.
We've got Internet of Things.
Hack Internet Day. Of Things, yes. Yeah. I should stop using all my acronyms. and we've got prizes and food and treats and snacks and all that stuff. People can just stay here and hack the whole day. But what was kind of fun was during kind of the opening remarks that I gave, was I asked the group, so who here has met somebody new through this event? You know, you didn't know somebody and you all of a sudden now are working next to them, kind of elbow to elbow. And pretty much every hand went up in the room. And that was amazing to me. In fact, that was, and I even told the group that was kind of a subtext of this event here, was to get people that wanted to work on, like, that wanted to be collaborative or work collaboratively on a project, with anybody, you know, and these people have met in coffee shops. They've met at hacker spaces. They've met in libraries and homes and stuff like that. Leading up to this event, you know what I mean? They didn't know each other, and all of a sudden, because of this event and a web page that we kind of put out there saying, "Hey, here's some teams who wants to join." People have just gathered around specific causes and have you know, become friends with people. And then, you know, it's just really exciting to see it happen.
And what kind of projects are people now, did you assign projects to them or to each one of the teams, or do they choose something or bring something along or?
Yep. No, the team, it basically all you needed to do was register as a quote unquote captain with your idea, and you could be a team of one. Hopefully by today you would be a team of more than that, which every team did do. So, but yeah, you basically pitched your own idea, and we didn't turn down any ideas. And we've got, you know, a dog feeder, you know, it's, well, I guess it's not really even just dogs per se. It will feed your pet over to the internet.
Complete with dog.
Yes. Yes, that is. We have a dog actually here at the event. He's walking around, which is fun. So it's just, again, it's a very, very sort of like open maker-esque kind of hacker event going on right now.
And what was the motivation for Minitronics, who's a medical device company, to swing open the doors on a Saturday for you guys to have this event?
Yeah, well, their VP of engineering here is he's a frequent speaker at the Arduino MN Group, and so I've known him for well over a year now. You know, he offered up the space. We've actually had some Arduino MN Group meetings here, but he also gave a few remarks at the beginning. And you know, Minitronics just wants to support this type of innovation and creativity. And you know, they are you know, mainly medical devices, but they're not dealing with millions of units. They're dealing with typically hundreds of units. So they're doing a lot of prototyping themselves here and building a lot of stuff on small scale. So this is really right up their alley. And it worked out great for us too, because I mean, they just got a beautiful facility. We've just got power drops we can use, and we just brought in tables, and we've just got a huge big screen TV and just plenty of room for us to spread out and do what we want to do.
Great. Fabulous.
So.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll be going all day, and then this evening we'll be having kind of our final pitches. So all the teams will come back up. They've done an elevator pitch, an initial elevator pitch this morning, very short, 30 seconds. But the plan is this evening to actually go through a demo and show stuff that they've competed or stuff that they've completed, and we'll have a vote for the winner.
Great. Are you going to?
So Justin, are you going to do a blog post on this at the end? To you know, kind of talk about what everyone did.
Yes, I will. I'm guessing you guys will too.
Yeah. Great.
That's my Saturday night. I'm going to be here. So, but Justin, tell me. Now I've totally lost my train of thought. So, no, tonight, if people want to come, you know, they can't wait to listen to our podcast and listen to it today and hear about tonight's event. Can people show up just to watch the pitches?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. There was a Eventbrite page just so we kind of got a feel for who was coming. But if you hear this and you want to come on down to Minitronics, for sure. And just go to iothackday.mn and you'll be able to see where the location is. But yeah, come on down. Everyone's welcome.
So there you go. Great. Thanks, great. Justin. I appreciate it very much.
Yeah.
So, you know, Justin is one of those guys that is always sort of on the edge, the front edge of things here in Minneapolis as far as building community and building tech communities. And, you know, he established Mobile Twin Cities, Mobile March, that sort of a thing when on the very front edge of mobile. And he's doing the same thing with IoT. And also, you have now a IoT Weekly. So check that out. That's at iotweekly.news.com. So you can check out that. Some aggregated news articles and things like that on the Internet of Things. So if you want to look into that, you can. Thanks, Justin. Man. Appreciate it. So let's talk about the one cool thing of the week. Julio is the one cool thing of the week. But Julio, do you have something you want to share?
Can't hear you, Julio.
Nope.
You're breaking up for some reason.
You're breaking up. Must be the magnet. Okay. Well, listen, well, why don't we wait for that? Well, Tim, talk all about your one cool thing of the week.
Yeah. Okay. So, I saw this early in the week in a Wired article. It's called the Anana Box, or it was called the Anana Box. And, basically it's a travel router that was going to cost $45 as a Kickstarter. And the guy had a $7,500 goal, and this Wired story got so many people interested in it that he went over $600,000 just in a few days. And the idea is great. It's a very small travel router that is running a version of Tor that allows you to anonymize all your traffic. So you plug it in, and the idea is it's a consumer kind of grade thing where you just buy it, you plug it in, and it works. So it'd be good for journalists that are in foreign countries covering things that maybe the government doesn't want them to cover, dissidents, all sorts of applications like that. So great idea. However, through the week, people sort of unwrapped that this wasn't necessarily an original deal, that he had used off-the-rack hardware and just did some software. There's some problems with it. So the net-net is the Anonybox was taken off of Kickstarter yesterday after raising $600,000. So it kind of came and went. But I thought it was a cool idea. So until then, if you want something like this, I would recommend the Onion Pi, which is a project that you use a Raspberry Pi and run the Tor router software on it, and that will anonymize all your traffic. And then it costs a little bit more than $45 to get all the pieces to do that, closer to 100.
Yeah, but then you can run all the traffic from your house, for example, through it if you wanted to. Yeah.
If you wanted to have very slow internet, but it would be slow internet that no one could track you.
Right,
that would be good.
Right.
But if you were, Julio was covering a story in Iran, for instance, he might want to take one of these with him.
Right. Yep.
So that was my cool thing of the week.
Nice.
So hopefully there will be something like that where it'll be a, $40, $50 device that will do this, but it won't be the Anonybox.
Well, and then, I just got done reading about all the Onion router, the Tor nodes, at a peak last week, there were 6,000 nodes, but there were 300,000 concurrent users at any given time. And that's why it's so slow, because there aren't enough people running proxy servers. So there's some problems with Tor just from an infrastructure standpoint. Forget about the fact that the NSA is trying to insert themselves in the whole process. But so Phil, what about your cool thing?
Well, I was kind of keeping with the whole IoT event today, and I came across the Makey kit, which is available. You can turn basically anything in your home into a computer key. That means you could clip it to food or people or Play-Doh.
They have a picture of a bunch of bananas.
Yes, you could have a banana keyboard if you want.
So, oh, my God.
It's just $50, and, it's just hours of fun for the entire family.
That's right. Is that a banana keyboard? You happy to see me?
Bada boom, right. Boom. How That's about cool. you, Steve? What's your cool thing of the week?
Well, so my cool thing is because I love those glow sticks, especially at Halloween, the ones you crack and it gets chemical, and they only last an hour or 2 hours. And we used to buy them for the kids, or I did, and I'd crack them and hang them to the kids so when they were running around, they wouldn't get run over by a car, And
run over by a car, you could find them easier. Yeah, that's right.
Exactly. Yeah. As they're clutching their Butterfingers. But at any rate, the glow stick had an issue, which was it's not reusable and it doesn't last very long. And so this orb is kind of a hybrid. It's kind of a combination of a glow stick and LED light that's rechargeable, and you can put it on hybrid mode. And basically what happens is the LED light excites the material that is in the glow stick. And it'll essentially run for 100 hours per charge. Mm. And it's got quite a shelf life, apparently 20 years. I don't know how they're measuring that, but it's a really cool, they show it clipped to backpacks. They show it people biking with it. They show, kids running trick or treating and all of that. And I looked at this and I thought, this is fabulous, mainly because we have a black dog, our little miniature poodle. And when we go for a walk, she sometimes runs out in the street, and it sure would be nice to have a light on her other than her flashing LED collar. So it was really a cool product.
Very nice. So did we get Julio back? Julio, did you have a cool thing you wanted to share?
Can you guys hear me now?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. I'm going to give you a very quickly a threefer with one common theme. If you're out with a tablet like mobile device, you want to be productive. You want to be able to get work done. And just within the last few weeks, I've stumbled on three products, which I think are kind of they're kind of amazing. I mentioned one of them, which is Microsoft's new universal mobile keyboard, which is this tiny little keyboard with a cover that you flip over, and on the underside of the cover is a little slot for your device. Fantastic for use with tablets or phones. So that is one.
Is that the wedge keyboard?
No, it's brand new. It's called Mobile Universal Keyboard. It's the It's the best keyboard to use with smartphones so far. It's really, really good. It's brand new.
$80.
And then Belkin and Logitech have this constant war to see who can one up the other with an iPad keyboard cases. And Belkin has just come out with the I think it's called the Ultimate Pro keyboard case, which is kind of amazing because it's a keyboard case that protects the iPad when it closes. But when you flip the lid open, you then have the option of doing one of three things: working in landscape mode, flipping it over into portrait mode, or actually completely removing the part of the iPad that's encased in a case. So you can remove the keyboard from the equation and just use the iPad in a case and use that with Apple's cover. So it's just massively flexible. The best iPad keyboard case so far for people who want to be productive. And then the third product is for people that are using old style Surface or Surface Pro or Surface Pro 2 tablets. There's a new case called the Freedom case, which is kind of a leather case that sort of folds over the Surface and its keyboard. But when you unpack it, when you unfold it, it has multiple positions, so you can use it with the keyboard, without the keyboard, at various angles on a table. You can use it on your lap, which is hard to do with the Surface normally. It's you have to watch the video because it's a little hard to explain in words, but it takes a Surface, an old style Surface tablet, Surface Pro tablet, to a completely new level. I mean, I just can't believe how cool this product is. So those are my three picks.
Nice. Yeah. Very nice.
I'll put those in the show notes.
Great. So in terms of events, we got to wrap, but there's really only one that we haven't covered, and that's the Minnesota High Tech Association's Techni Awards, which will be November 13th.
Yep.
But we've got the Cybersecurity Summit coming up and Midwest Mobile Summit, the 21st and 23rd, respectively. And the Medication Management Codeathon, all things that we've covered before. But, you know, there's a fair number of events. And just I'm still struck by the fact that in the last 2 years or so, there's been this unbelievable explosion of events in the Twin City or in Minnesota proper. But there's a lot of activity. So it's really fun to see.
So there you go.
Yeah.
So there's lots going on. Don't forget, if you want to Saturday night, join us for the Internet of Things Hack Day culmination. But and then there'll be all sorts of things to cover and talk about next week on
the Minnovate Gang Podcast.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Julio.
Have a good week.
Take it easy.